Trump impeached, a Democratic debate with fewer candidates on stage, plus an Obamacare court ruling, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 20th, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Donald Trump became the third president in U.S. history to be impeached by the House of Representatives. The votes on two articles of impeachment, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, were largely partisan. No Republicans voted for impeachment. Two Democrats voted against on one count, three on the other. Under the rules of impeachment, the U.S. Senate should now hold a trial before a vote on whether to remove the president from office. Republican U.S. Senator Todd Young won't tip his hand right now. He only says he'll be a, quote, conscientious U.S. senator.
Do my job, review the factual record, apply it against what I regard as the appropriate standard of high crimes and misdemeanor.
Young's Hoosier Republican colleague, Senator Mike Braun, went on MSNBC to discuss impeachment, which he calls a, quote, orchestrated foregone conclusion. Braun indicated he's already made up his mind in favor of acquitting the president.
It's not like we haven't heard a lot about it, and I think that's why belabor it? I know most Hoosiers are disappointed we're not doing other stuff.
Given the likely outcome in the Senate, what impact does impeachment have? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, I feel like I've asked this question a lot over the last few months, but now that it's actually happened, what effect does impeachment have on Donald Trump?
Well, in the near term, it looks like it's more obvious he's going to be reelected. I mean, this has clearly rallied his base. He was at a rally when it happened that had tens of thousands of people at it, and that's just been his experience going across the country. And you contrast that against a Democrat debate stage the other night, where they're on wildly different pages on the path forward. They haven't coalesced behind a single, not just a single candidate, but a single direction that they want to take the country between a more moderate or a more extreme direction. So the only unified part of the country right now is Donald Trump's base.
Which is 40% of the population.
Because we pretty much know what the Senate is going to do or not do in this case.
Yeah, we talked about this before, but what I said before still holds, okay? His conduct was outrageous, and it threatened our democracy. He could have stopped this at the same time by saying, you know, I should have chosen my words more carefully, or I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Or the Senate could have stepped up like big boys and said, we're not going to tolerate this kind of conduct. We'll vote for censure, but not impeachment. But to say that that conversation that he had with the leader of Ukraine was perfect, and to say that he had done nothing wrong, and to say that that kind of conduct is acceptable is wrong. And I don't care what the political consequences of this are. When somebody like him threatens our democracy,
well,
they are threatening our democracy is what they are doing. And I don't think it's conduct. When Mueller's report came out and he claimed he was exonerated by that, this call happened the next day. If he thinks he can get away with this, who knows what he does next? He may manufacture evidence and say, this is just part of the process, and I'm president, and anybody who questions it is a traitor or somehow demeaned or somehow in some other way he attacks. It is not acceptable conduct. And he could have stopped it, and he didn't.
That was a great impression.
That was a great Donald Trump.
I would have loved to see Nancy Pelosi go to the House Democratic Caucus and go, guys, he apologized to me.
You know what?
I bet it would have stopped it. We've been trying to impeach him for 3 years.
This is all you had at the end of the day. We'll never know because he thinks he's perfect.
Let me ask the impact question on a more local level. So we've seen it pop up this week in two different congressional races. In the first district in the Democratic primary and in the fifth district between Republicans and Democrats. Will this have a lasting impact all the way to next November next May and then next November?
I don't think so. I think, you know, the way the world works right now, I mean, you can barely keep things on the front burner for a week or two. I mean, this will be months later when people are casting choices. And so I don't think how a particular congressman or voted on this will really impact anyone.
Is that particularly true in these two cases? Because the fights that are being had over impeachment aren't actually between sitting congresspeople. They're between people vying to replace open seats.
Probably. I mean, it seems to me that it shows that in the U.S. House, you do have, surprise, gerrymandering out there, and you have a lot of districts that are hard right or as much hard left as there is in sort of American society now. And so you have so the debates or the fights are, I mean, they're in many cases are diametrically opposite. They want, you know, Republicans wanting other Republicans to take a truth test, basically to stand firm with the president, and then on the other side you have Democrats saying, you know, how come you were wavering a little bit? You know, first it was a censure, now it's going to, where are you on this? And it shows the disparity between the U.S. House and then the Senate, where we know the outcome, of course, but it is interesting that because they, by definition, represent larger constituencies that, in not every case, but in a lot of cases, are actually a little more purple, a little more nuanced in terms of their partisan qualities, the states they represent, there's a little bit of a different tone. Again, not to suggest that
anything didn't
the mean. Outcome will be different.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, which we'll be asking again, is, will President Trump win re-election in 2020? A yes or B no. Last week's question, should Indiana ban Hoosier motorists from using their cell phones while driving unless they're hands-free, as lawmakers want to do now? 76% of you say yes, 24% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Democratic presidential candidates met this week for the sixth primary debate, the smallest stage so far, just seven candidates. The first hour of the debate was relatively tame. Candidates rarely addressed each other and never really went on the attack. That changed in the debate's second half, and Pete Buttigieg was the biggest target, including perhaps most notably in this exchange with Elizabeth Warren over his high-dollar fundraisers.
So the mayor just recently had a fundraiser that was held in a wine cave full of crystals and served $900 a bottle wine. Think about who comes to that. He had promised that every fundraiser he would do would be open door, but this one was closed door. We made the decision many years ago that rich people in smoke-filled rooms would not pick the next president of the United States. Billionaires in wine caves should not pick the next president of the United States.
Mr. Mayor, your response. You know, according to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. So if this is important, this is the problem with issuing purity tests you cannot yourself pass.
And Elena, we finally saw Buttigieg with a real target on his back for the first time in one of these debates. How did he handle it?
I thought he handled it very, very well. I mean, I thought that line, for example, was right on target. I mean, he's being attacked by a number of different sides because he's a force, because people recognize the fact that it's not only the fact that he's raised so much money, it's the fact that he's a voice of moderation, a thoughtful voice of moderation, who's extremely intelligent and extremely articulate, and he's pulling from Elizabeth Warren and from A.B. Klobuchar, and that's why the attacks are starting. So, I mean, I'm sure that he will handle it in successive debates even better than he did last night because he'll be more accustomed to it. Before this, he had trouble getting attention and getting the opportunity to speak. That wasn't the problem last night.
No, that definitely wasn't the problem last night.
And I thought he did extremely well.
How do you think he handled it?
I thought he handled it pretty well. I mean, just this is a nonpartisan statement, but like when you're at this point in this process, if they're shooting at you, that's a good place
news.
To be.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a reason for that, and that's that he has done a good job of you know, doing what matters right now, which is, and people don't like it, and they don't like talking about it, but it is the metrics right now that matter are organization and money. You know, and that especially matters in early primary states and organization on the ground. And Republicans, by the way, are doing a tremendous job on that too. The RNC's raised over $215 million. The president's raised hundreds of millions of dollars. And the reality is they're going to have to compete with that. And if you're going to have Elizabeth Warren downplaying it or banging on people for making contributions. It's not going to work out well for him.
I was going to say something that Mike just alluded to, which is we've already seen between the money and the polls, Pete Buttigieg considered to be in this upper tier. But was this perhaps the best evidence that the others now see him as perhaps the greatest threat, at least in the early primaries?
Well, I think we had ample evidence, as you suggested. I mean, when you look at who had been such a potent fundraiser the last few reporting cycles, it was Pete Buttigieg. When you look at who had had the biggest surge in popularity, not in every sector, he's still weak in certain demographic subsectors, but he has done very well. So it's not, I don't think this was just the aha moment, but it was what I think we all predicted, which is that eventually when you are seen as a threat, when you're seen as the front runner, you're going to become a target. And that's certainly what we saw here. So again, it's probably, you know, he knew it was coming and he handled it deftly. And I don't think any.
I want to invitation him to this wine cave that Elizabeth Warren kept talking about.
And you want to try that $900 bottle of wine.
I want to point out before I ask you a question, Nikki, that wine cave story, the reason we know about that wine cave is from Brian Sladisco, Associated Press reporter who used to work next to me in the Indiana State House. Just shout out to Brian.
See, it's all local.
Where is it located?
It all comes back
we
to
want
Indiana.
To go.
Yeah, so I think it's out in on location.
I think WFYI Wine Fest is doing those $900
bottles.
Well, I'm just start the rumor. Maybe we can get some.
Speaking of front runners, the one who's considered to have been the front runner this whole time is Joe Biden. Only Andrew Yang and Tom Steyer spoke less than Joe Biden did last night. But is that not necessarily a bad thing for Joe Biden?
Oh, I think Joe Biden had a pretty good night. I mean, one of his stronger performances. And maybe it's helpful that he obviously wasn't being attacked, so he wasn't having to defend himself all the time as much as Pete was, for instance. So I think he sort of picked his moments and went there.
All right. Well, a federal appeals court ruled this week that the individual mandate provision of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is unconstitutional. The U.S. Supreme Court previously upheld the ACA provision requiring most people to have health insurance or pay a penalty, but Republicans in Congress repealed that tax penalty, and the Fifth Circuit says the provision is therefore no longer constitutional. The Affordable Care Act has helped expand health care coverage for 400,000 Hoosiers through the Healthy Indiana Plan. Attorney General Curtis Hill has participated in the lawsuit challenging the ACA. He says the latest ruling means it's time for the country to move past Obamacare, which he calls a failure. And Nikki Kelly, despite Hill's argument that the latest decision shows it's time to move on, this case is still far from over, right?
Yeah, I mean,
somehow
the U.S. Supreme Court is still going to have to weigh in again, though I think the likelihood of it being struck down is a lot stronger since they've, you know, tweaked the legislation along the way. I do hope, I mean, the fact is that versus the way the ACA was originally passed versus what we have now, it's pretty much gutted. I mean, it's not doing anything that they said it would, because if you take away, you know, 10 out of 18 points, it's just not going to
have
the same
expansion,
impact.
Yes, that's true.
You do. So I'm hoping that there's some sort of backup plan being worked on.
Oh, backup plan.
Maybe in the wine cave. Maybe we're figuring that out.
Maybe they need to go to the wine cave.
Let me ask this question, which is, however this court case is resolved, it's not going to be before the November 2020. The timing just cannot work out that way, certainly, for a ruling to come out from the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is going to be hanging over the heads of everybody who's running for office in 2020. Does that help one party over the other?
I would think, and who would have said this 4 or 5 years ago when everybody, this was the Republican issue that was being used as a bludgeon to bump the heads of Democratic office holders and challengers. Now I think it favors generally Democrats because you look at some of the provisions that, as predicted, proved to be pretty popular. Not just the ones that have been mentioned, but pre-existing condition, of course, the 26-year-old, you can have lifetime caps. So I think it plays generally in Democratic favor. And so the irony in all this, I suppose, is that I think no matter how you slice it, you just look at the trend lines and demographics, and if you really want to pat when we're all done with this and I no longer need insurance because I won't be around anymore, there will be probably some sort of single-payer system or some sort of fund that will be a lot more offensive to a lot of opponents of the Affordable Care Act than that they have fought so vociferously and adamantly against. They're going to end up, what I'm trying to say is, with something that they view as far worse.
I want to ask about, so I just asked about the electoral impact of this looming decision at some point. Locally speaking, Curtis Hill is a part of this lawsuit. He is very proud of that fact. Mm-hmm. Will that hurt him if he is the candidate for Attorney General next year?
No, I don't think it will. I think it'll hurt Republicans generally if it's thrown out. And in Indiana, talk locally, you have 400,000 people lose Medicaid coverage. The idea that we're still talking about this in a way that the Republicans who continue to oppose this believe there's some great outcome at the end of this if they win is insane. We are 10 years into this. We have bent the economy and the healthcare industry into this model. And if we want to pivot to another model, let's spend our time and resources maybe on that debate, because Obamacare clearly is not perfect. It clearly does leave tens of millions of people behind. It clearly has done nothing to contain costs, and we experience that more in central Indiana with the highest hospital costs in the country than just about anywhere else. So the energy we need to invest in that and solving that problem is far more productive and not as politically destructive to Republicans than what we're doing here.
And remember, this was a Republican plan, if you trace it back.
But when Trump was elected, it was repeal and replace. He's been in there 3 years. Have we seen a replacement, even offered? I don't think so. This is the only developed country in the world without a coherent health care system, the only one. We will wind up going to single payer, which the Republicans so adamantly opposed the last time around. But if Obamacare is struck down, pre-existing conditions will be okay in Indiana, thanks to my husband, but they won't be in the other 49 states.
Not necessarily all of them. Some of them, I think.
Many of them, and the Medicaid expansion, 400,000 in this state alone will lose health care coverage. So, and the Republicans have nothing to offer to replace it. So I think, electorally speaking, it's going to be a disaster for Republicans because the threat is real that this is going to be completely repealed.
It's more real now than it's ever been before. Well, Indiana's Attorney Disciplinary Commission wants Attorney General Curtis Hill's law license suspended for 2 years, revealed in the latest procedural step in Hill's disciplinary process. Four women accused Curtis Hill of sexual misconduct, and those allegations prompted the State Disciplinary Commission to file a complaint against Hill. A hearing officer, former Supreme Court Justice Myra Selby, presided over a four-day hearing on that complaint in October. Now, the two sides have filed proposals on what they'd like Selby to do. The Disciplinary Commission wants Hill's license suspended for 2 years. It says Hill's actions have dealt a, quote, significant blow to faith in the state's legal system and require a significant response. Hill's team wants the complaint dismissed. It says that while the Attorney General's behavior might be considered boorish and offensive, it happened at a private event that has no connection to his job or the practice of law. There is no timetable for Selby's decision. John Schwanis, does this tell us anything really about the potential outcome here?
Well, I was surprised maybe by the Disciplinary Commission's recommendation. That's a significant punishment, the recommendation of 2 years suspended license. Now, we don't know.
Without automatic reinstatement, too.
Right. We don't know for sure if that, talk about litigation. We'll probably have a lot of litigation if it comes to that about whether that would mean he can't serve or not, since it's a temporary suspension under Indiana statute, of course. He needs to be a lawyer, and that would suggest
he needs to have a license.
A license, and he wouldn't have one. And you look at the language in the recommendation where it used words such as deliberate, demeaning, and loathsome, which you don't see very often. But I would hasten to add that really, what the Disciplinary Commission suggested is immaterial. It's all initially up to Myra Selby, right. And then even that becomes immaterial because then it's all what the Supreme Court wants.
Were you a little surprised by how much they're asking for here?
I wasn't. I mean, I used to cover courts for years, and to me it was just like that, like the prosecutors coming in looking for the maximum sentence, the defense coming in saying, you know,
throw this case out. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I wasn't too surprised. I do think it was interesting that the Disciplinary Commission focused a lot on, you know, how, I get not retaliatory, but just how Curtis Hill hasn't ever accepted any responsibility. He hasn't apologized. He's just been, you know, 100%.
Yeah.
So they focused a lot on that. And I also don't think the whole, you know, this has nothing to do with him as a lawyer thing will get very far. We see lawyers punished all the time for things like drunk driving or, you know, alcoholism-related offenses, and they don't necessarily have anything to do with the law.
Considering how you look at some of the other other attorneys getting their law licenses suspended. This would be on the really far end of, and the rare end of something like that. Yeah. Do you think anything close to this is likely?
I don't know. I mean, it was a little harsher than I thought it would be, but you can't have the highest legal representative of the state of Indiana lying and demeaning and taking a page out of Donald Trump's playbook and attacking anybody who says anything negative about him, which is what Curtis Hill has done. So he's obviously a disgrace to the office. I mean, he should do the right thing and resign, but I don't see that happening somehow.
It wouldn't be so harsh as unprecedented, though. We should point out another statewide office holder had permanent disbarment imposed. So there is precedent.
It's not absolutely never happened before. At this point, is this just, for Curtis Hill, is this just another peg on the board of, well, I'm just forging ahead as ever?
Well, he's stuck with the playbook, but this may be, and that has been the playbook. It's just kind of, just keep rolling along.
Stay
alive,
right?
But there's an actual consequence here that could trigger.
Potential one, right?
The problem, of course,
is timing. We have no idea when she will come out with
Well,
with
and
that
if the license goes, then the question happens, is there a vacancy, and does the governor appoint? And does the suspension of the license mean that the license doesn't exist? That's going to wind up being litigated as well.
Maximum chaos. Well, U.S. Senator Todd Young is touting a couple provisions he helped get into a federal spending deal Congress approved this week. The bipartisan spending deal includes a provision that permanently repeals a tax on medical devices, a major industry in Indiana. Hoosier Senator Todd Young says he's been pushing for that for nearly a decade.
This 2.3% tax on sales, not on profits, but on sales, inhibited innovation and created a great threat to the livelihoods of some very well-paid manufacturing workers and their families.
The tax was a major source of funding for the Affordable Care Act and thus programs like the Healthy Indiana Plan. The federal spending deal also raises the legal age to buy tobacco products from 18 to 21. Young says the federal measure would still require states like Indiana to raise the age to comply. Legislative leaders of both parties and the governor have already announced their intention to push for the age increase in the 2020 session. And Delaney, how big a win is this spending deal for Americans and for Hoosiers?
Well, certainly the medical device tax is important to Indiana because it's a major manufacturer. It hasn't been enforced for several years either, though, but making it permanent is fine. But the spending deal itself is a disaster. I mean, we're talking about exploding that deficit out the window since Donald Trump's been elected. I mean, we've now in the position of paying more to farmers as a result of his ill-thought-out trade war with China, more than twice as much as Obama was excoriated for paying in the automobile bailout, which, by the way, was paid back. And these farmers are not going to be paying this back. Our deficit is through the roof. And this is from the supposedly financially
deficit hawk
conservative.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was expecting these arguments from the other side of the table. But
let
me ask you.
They can't make them
but
anymore.
Again, when it comes down to it, do Americans care a lot more about, well, this is what I'm getting in this spending deal, as opposed to, well, this is what the deficit is now?
I don't think anyone cares at all about this spending deal. I mean, we used to shut governments down over these things, right? For years, we would shut the government down every 6 months or, you know, twice a year over, or at least get to the brink of it. And now, I agree with Ann that these deficit exploding spending bills just kind of go through, and everybody kind of, we're kind of getting back to the old way, though. It's like, hey, I'm going to hang that Tobacco 21 thing on there. I'm going to hang my little...
You don't have earmarks.
Which actually gives me hope that Washington might work again.
Didn't this feel a little, I mean, the lack of, like, attention on this spending deal kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you at all?
Yeah, because as has been articulated here, these used to be front page stories, and now, you know.
Although, admittedly, a president got impeached this week. So.
Well, okay,
so kind of brings you down the list a little bit.
But even that'll fade.
Which Americans also didn't care about.
Yeah.
Well, finally, Christmas is just a few days away. Mike O'Brien, what was the best present Indiana got in 2019?
I think a record number of mayors getting elected. I think another year of Republican leadership in Indiana looks pretty. I mean, we were teed up pretty well to keep that going through the 2020 election.
What was the best president Indiana got in 2019?
The overwhelming victories by Democrats in Marion County.
All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. All of us here at Indiana Week in Review hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Join us next time, because, of course, a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.